Hi, this is Paul Ingram of PaintScience.com. This is the private, members-only podcast of audio versions of selected blog posts. Though, to be honest, almost all of them get selected now. As long as it's more than about 500 words, it's worth recording. But not everything makes it to the podcast or even the newsletter. Sometimes I publish little tiny blog posts that are only available on the website and by RSS. I thought today I'd include a couple of those little ones, a couple recent ones, as a warm-up, and maybe that's a template for the future. Maybe I'll start including all of my little posts, integrating them into the larger recordings. So first, let's look at an inaccessible scientific article about the growing inaccessibility of science. This post featured a screenshot which went wild on social media a while back, I think a year or two ago. It's a screenshot of an ironically expensive paywall for a scientific article titled The Growing Inaccessibility of Science. The journal Nature later took down that paywall on that ancient article, probably because of the flood of traffic that was created by the viral screenshot. And it is easy to see why it went viral. A $200 a year price tag on an article about the growing inaccessibility of science. That is some serious chef's kiss irony. However, as much as I'd like to see all science be free, I don't actually think $200 a year is an outrageous price for what the journal Nature offers. And if any individual would pay that, wouldn't it be someone just like me, a science journalist? But I don't subscribe to most journals because the articles that I care about are scattered across far too many of them, despite my strong focus on pain. I live in a subject matter niche, but even then, the articles I care about are in dozens of different journals. So no one subscription would suit me, not even to the Journal of Pain itself. That journal has a lot of content I don't care about and only occasionally has an article I do care about, so I don't subscribe to it. The fees charged by most journals for temporary access to just one article are usually well over USD 30. There's one I wanted just the other day when I was writing this post that was $68 or $457 for the entire issue. Now that kind of pricing is absurd, and it always has been. I do pay those absurd fees occasionally, but less than I used to because I have gotten better at getting free full-text versions. For instance, just a few minutes after hitting that $68 paywall, I had the PDF directly from the lead author. I just sent him a note and asked, and he sent it to me because they can do that, and they are generally happy to. And that is one example of a tip for how to find full-text papers. I have a full list of those tips in my research tips article. Okay, next item, and this is not just mini, this is a micro blog post that was literally three sentences. What if the word ache, as in aches and pains, was spelled A-K-E? That was actually one of many early attempts to tidy up English spelling. And I learned that from author Gabe Henry, talking about his new book, Enough is Enough. And you can guess which of those, that one of those is spelled E-N-U-F. Talking about his new book on the podcast You're Wrong About, the November 11 episode. The whole thing was really entertaining. Of course, being a writer by nature, I really enjoyed the language content there. But when I heard AKE, of course, I had to put something about that onto PainScience.com. Okay, and now for today's main topic, which will take several minutes to cover, treating arthritis with Ozempic. About a year ago, I wrote about a happy study and a post titled Lose Belly Fat, Hurt Less Because Metabolism. That was token coverage, though, and I'm finally returning to dive deeper after I finally found the full text. This post also builds on a much more recent post, Belly Fat Hurts, The Waistline Plot Thickens. This is a theme that has been developing steadily on PainScience.com over the last couple years. So this post is about some particularly persuasive and positive science, but for balance, I will also look at a new safety study that pushes back, but just a little bit. It won't ruin the good news. Bledal et al. Did a trial of Ozempic for heavier patients with painful knee arthritis. It is an impressive example of the kind of effect on pain that we wish we could see from more studies. Substantial and lasting, blazingly obvious on a graph. You don't have to squint to see this one. Statistical significance and clear clinical significance. Am I dreaming? This is a positive result we can have some confidence in. These drugs reduce blood sugar and treat obesity with a variety of downstream benefits that are still being studied. We can probably now add good for arthritis to the growing list of benefits with mostly only minor side effects. And it's how it probably works that is so cool. So Bledal et al. Conducted a randomized double-blind trial, so neither participants nor the researchers knew who was getting the drug versus a placebo. Over 400 adults with both obesity and knee osteoarthritis. The obesity was a BMI of greater than 30, and the arthritis was radiographically confirmed and quite painful, bad cases. They got weekly injections of either Ozempic or placebo for 68 weeks, and two main outcomes were tracked, body weight and pain, specifically the WOMAC pain score, which is a well-established scoring system for knee osteoarthritis. The Ozempic takers, 271 of those, lost an average of about 10% more weight than those on placebo, 136 placebo takers, for a total of 13.7% weight loss, a remarkable result in itself, regardless of any effect on arthritic knees. That is quite a lot of weight to lose. When you lose that much fat, you likely also lose visceral fat, which is usually the problem fat. You know how I know that 13.7% is a lot of fat to lose? Because I've been working my ass off almost literally for 6 months now to lose weight. And I haven't hit 13%. And I can tell you what I've lost so far is really significant and was very difficult to achieve. This is a huge challenge. I have not been taking Ozempic. And I am not yet at 13.7% of my body weight lost. And so I know that if I lost 13.7%, I'd be very satisfied. I'd be very happy with my results. Getting back to the study, both groups got counseling on a reduced calorie diet and exercise. So that semaglutide effect is on top of lifestyle advice, not instead of it. In other words, they lost 10% more than people who were trying, which is much more impressive than losing 10% more weight than people who aren't trying. It's famously easy to lose more weight than people who aren't even trying to lose weight. There was more pain relief with Ozempic than placebo, a respectable improvement in WOMAC pain scores of minus 41 versus 27 for placebo, which is a solid difference of minus 14 on a 100-point scale. The improvement in function scores was also similar. Now, this may not sound like a lot. 14 might not sound like a lot, but it easily clears most published thresholds for clinically meaningful improvement, especially in a population starting with high baseline pain. But let's dig into this a little bit more, because I really want to be clear that this is, in fact, a meaningful result. Many osteoarthritis trials struggle to achieve between group differences of even 8 points. A 14-point difference is not just clinically significant, but it is clinically significant by a healthy and easily felt margin. In osteoarthritis research, the minimally clinically important difference, the MCID for WOMAC pain, is usually considered to be 10 to 12 points on that 100-point scale. Some analyses, especially for more symptomatic populations, put the threshold a bit higher, closer to 15 to 20 points for a change that patients clearly perceive as important. This semaglutide versus placebo difference sits squarely within that range. People in this trial also had fairly intense knee pain, 71 out of 100. That was the mean, 71 points of pain on that 100-point scale. And MCID estimates tend to skew upwards in cohorts with high baseline severity, making a 14-point gap even more impressive. Basically, the more pain you're in, the more you notice a 10-point change. 10 points means more to people who are hurting more. Finally, this was not just a mean difference. The whole distribution shifted substantially. Nearly all semaglutide participants improved, and many improved a lot. That graph shape strongly supports that the effect is not only statistically significant, but meaningful in lived experience. So, yeah. Good news. Quoting the authors from their conclusion, treatment with semaglutide resulted in greater improvements than placebo across all pain-related endpoints, a finding that is in line with those from an observational study involving adults with knee osteoarthritis and type 2 diabetes. I picked out that phrase because it's interesting that this trial is basically rigorously confirming what had previously been one of those iffy, just a correlation results. So there was some previous research that only showed a correlation between type 2 diabetes and knee osteoarthritis, which strongly suggested what might happen with a trial like this. But it was, you know, correlation famously does not imply causation, but it probably did in this case. Bledall et al.'s experiments strongly suggest that the reduced arthritis symptoms really are being driven by Ozempic, rather than just being some kind of Ozempic-flattering coincidence. There are limitations to the study, of course, most notably the narrow scope, the short duration, and being paid for by Ozempic's manufacturer. That is a limitation that will jump out for a lot of people. So that's a high-level summary, but let's dig into the specific limitations for the record. The narrow scope, this is a study of only knee osteoarthritis in people with obesity. So technically, we can't generalize to, say, hip osteoarthritis. The mechanism is unknown. I'm going to address that in more detail right after this, but the study does not show how this works. So more on that shortly. There's no body composition data. There are total weight change, but visceral fat, biomarkers, inflammatory measures, none of that was assessed. A bunch of nice-to-haves were not there. It'd be good to have that detail, and we don't. And this was relatively short-term and symptom-focused. This study ran 68 weeks, and it didn't evaluate structural progression or durability beyond that period. So, you know, for all we know, everybody went back to the way they were before 2 weeks after the study ended. Probably not, but the point is, we don't know. And then, of course, there's that industry involvement. Ozempic maker Novo Nordisk funded this trial, which is never necessarily a deal breaker, but it's always important context. And in this case, I don't think that this or any of the other limitations are serious. The study design is quite good enough to make the results relatively bias-proof. Nothing in science is ever totally bias-proof, but it's harder to screw up the data with a study design like this. So we can probably take it at its word. And of course, remember, this is not in a vacuum. We've got a lot of other relevant evidence all pointing this way. And there's going to be more about that coming up shortly here. But first, let's talk about how does Ozempic treat arthritis anyway? Well, weight loss is already known to be a good investment in managing arthritis, and Ozempic is just really good at helping people lose weight, and this study mainly just connects those dots. But how? How does it work? It's probably not just the reduced load on the knees. It probably is mainly a metabolic effect. Here is Asaf Weissman. Quote, belly fat is active tissue that secretes adipokines and other pro-inflammatory agents, which contribute to epigenetic changes that accelerate tissue degeneration. Now, to be clear, that statement not directly supported by this study. In fact, Bledall et al. Explicitly say that mechanistic conclusions cannot be drawn. But they do cite preclinical data suggesting possible anti-inflammatory and anti-degradative GLP-1 effects. And we can speculate. We've had many reasons to suspect that this is how it works for a long time. But this is a particularly high-quality placebo-controlled trial of an effective weight loss drug in humans, and it delivers strong evidence that many people will hurt less if they lose weight, and probably for metabolic reasons. In other words, this result was precisely predictable based on the metabolic argument. If the metabolic argument is correct, this is the result that we expect to see, and here it is in spades. And it's also quite unlikely that modestly reduced load alone would make so much of a difference and so quickly. This has profound implications. It's likely that the GLP-1 receptor agonists will be helpful for anything painful that's powered by metabolic syndrome and inflammation. Inflammation being the escalation of systemic inflammation and its complications as we age. The collective consequence of poor fitness, obesity, aging, genetics, and hard living. It's the roots of cardiovascular disease and diabetes, which in turn are major risk factors for many kinds of chronic pain. And these drugs clearly treat metabolic syndrome effectively. Okay, now for balance, I really have to talk about Xi et al. Does this other study nuke the good news from Blidol et al.? I'm talking about a truly massive study here. Almost a 250,000 diabetic U.S. veterans taking Ozempic. The researchers were looking for a broad range of effects on biology, good and bad, large and small. And the results, they give us even more evidence of broad health benefits for dozens of conditions. And that harmonizes strongly with the overall good news about the health benefits of these drugs. But I am contractually obliged to confess that they also found something that seems at odds with Blidol et al.'s good news and with the important it's the metabolism point. They actually found small increases in several musculoskeletal problems, arthritis, joint and bone pain, and tendinitis. Ruh-roh. So that looks like a direct contradiction. One study says less pain, the other says more. I can tell you I had a bad moment when I first noticed this. I thought, I'm going to have to rewrite this whole blog post. So what gives? Is the good news invalidated? Fortunately, not. These studies measured different things in different ways in different populations. Blidol asks, if you already have arthritis and obesity, does high-dose semaglutide help your pain? And the answer was a resounding yes. So it was very focused, very specific. Xi asks, across millions of clinic visits, are people on semaglutide more likely to get nonspecific musculoskeletal diagnostic codes? Answer, only slightly, and the details are not in focus. So the hazard ratios for these complications were tiny, around 1.1 to 1.13, so just like slightly more likely in people taking semaglutides. And those were also based on broad ICD codes, not joint-specific symptom measurements. So small increases in those codes are not necessarily drug side effects. They could come from more clinic contact, detection bias, miscoding, activity-related aches during weight loss, or unmasking old pains as people move more. Semaglutide clearly improves knee arthritis symptoms in the specific group studied by Blidol. We can really trust that. While Xi's broad database signals reflect tiny and noisy shifts, they're way, way harder to interpret. So these studies harmonize much more than they clash. Xi does not undermine the basic idea that losing weight tends to help arthritis and has a lot of health benefits. We can still go with that. But nevertheless, let's still consider what could possibly go wrong. Well, duh. Obviously, it's the fat shaming. In terms of side effects, taking Ozempic mostly went fine. 10% of the experimental group had some kind of medical trouble compared to 8% on placebo, but those incidents were probably mostly unrelated to the drug, and that's not just wishful thinking. Remember that we've got Xi et al. To confirm that there was a distinct lack of negative health effects in a huge sample of patients. There were some minor side effects, mostly the predictable, well-known nausea and diarrhea, which caused 6.7% to stop taking Ozempic versus just 3% for placebo. So that's not nothing, but it's not terrible either. And some of those people probably would have been fine on reduced dosages, which I've seen in some people that I know. But side effects are not the only hazard here. I can easily imagine bigger picture problems. This kind of evidence can and probably will inspire excessive and misplaced blaming and shaming. As my last post on this topic strongly emphasized, it is definitely possible to be heavy and healthy. People who do not need to lose weight will be hectored as if they do. And many of those who do will be pushed too hard with too much moralizing. It's now also clear that taking Ozempic is somewhat stigmatized. The attitude that it's cheating and lazy appears to be widespread on social media, and some of that is coming from healthcare professionals who obviously should know better. Losing weight is one of the most easier said than done problems in life, and no one should take on a challenge like that without clear cause and earnest and compassionate support. These issues are abuses of the truth, however, not contradictions. The evidence still strongly suggests that weight loss is a valuable investment in fighting at least some major kinds of future pain for many people, and we have strong reasons to believe that it's a metabolic effect rather than a mechanical one and probably isn't limited to arthritis. If this is how things actually work, then we have to just forge ahead as best we can and start to think of weight loss as an important tonic for many kinds of chronic pain. And Ozempic as a way to make it possible for many millions of people and much easier for many more. Okay, that's the post for today. Thank you for listening. Talk to you next time.